folks. Thanks for tuning into the Keep or Cut podcast. It's episode 147. I'm your host today, Pete Ball, joined by Chad Young. Today is going to be kind of an episode that's a little all over the place. We're just going to talk about players and their keeper outlook, but there's a pair of things we need to do first. And the very first thing is look at the number 47, which I'm pulling up now on Baseball Reference, and I think I have one guy in mind. Never mind. Nope. Whoever it was, I had way wrong. So we have Jesse Orozco, who played forever and wore the number 24 or wore the number 47 for 24 years. But it is definitely Chad. I mean, it's got to be the Tom Glavine episode.
Yeah. I mean, I'm even looking further down to see is like, there anybody that I particularly liked during their career that it stands out to me? And like, yeah, I think Glavine's the guy. Howie Kendrick wore it for a long time. I was always a big Howie Kendrick fan. Yeah, that's
yeah. I'm trying to look for guys who were like fantasy relevant during my time, and Kendrick and
Francisco Liriano is the other.
Yeah,
name.
Cueto too. I guess I can't ignore Cueto. Cueto had a few excellent seasons. He's just kind of like, you know, hung around so long that we don't remember how good Johnny Cueto was, but Johnny Cueto was definitely fantasy relevant. So Tom Glavine episode's a no-brainer. And now we got to talk about our head-to-head hero of the week, or we just call it head-to-head hero. Just head-to-head hero, right? Not head-to-head hero of the week. I don't want to upset our sponsors. We got to make sure we get our thing right here. Chad, did you have time to nail down your head-to-head hero?
I pulled one, and it's sort of a, you know, obvious answer and maybe not a very exciting one, but I think it has to be said. And that's Juan Soto, who has just been absolutely on fire the last week. He has 6 home runs in his last 7 games, 10 runs and 9 RBIs in that stretch. He also has a 27% walk rate and just a 125 BABIP. So, some bad batted ball luck and still putting up, you know, just an absolutely bonkers week. There's no actionable information here. There's nothing that I'm not here like, oh, you should go pick up Juan Soto if he's available. He's really turned it around. No, I get it, but I just can't ignore it.
Yeah, no, you definitely can't. And I'm praying to God he does not extend with the Yankees. But the more he hypes up Aaron Judge, those two seem to have a real genuine bond there, the more I'm worried he's going to stick around in New York. But no, that's you're right. It's an obvious pick, but it has to be said because he hasn't just been great. I mean, he's lighting the world on fire. I'll go with a little bit of it's definitely a guy who people are familiar with. He had a top 200 ADP, but up until the month of August, he had been just a massive disappointment. And that's Jake Berger. Jake Berger has really taken off. I mean, he's had a great week. You know, I'll reference that for the sake of the segment, but it really has been just a great August. He's got a 242. WRC plus in the month of August, that averages 365 for the month. I think Berger still pretty much is what we thought he was before the year. It just took him a while to get to that point, which is like a perfectly fine. He's not going to walk. He's not going to have a lot of impact in your OBP leagues. But if you just need power or you've been struggling at third base, like a lot of people have, then he's going to be good for that. So another guy who is interesting is Eugenio Suarez. So I guess to kind of put you on the spot here, Chad, would you rather, if you need help at third base, shallower league, somehow these two are still available, are you taking Berger or are you taking Eugenio Suarez rest of season?
I probably, in keeper leagues, I'd probably take Berger because I think he has more potential keeper value. If it were really just rest of season, I don't know, I'd probably still take Berger. I think like, if you look at what he's done on the year so far, it's you basically expect him to keep up his overall line for the year, not what he's done the last month, but his overall line for the year. And I just have more faith in that than I do in Eugenio Suarez, who hasn't been as good for the season, doesn't project to be as good the rest of the season. So I think, you know, in our keeper universe, the 28-year-old Berger versus the 33-year-old Suarez makes a big difference. But even in a redraft world, I think Berger has more to offer.
Yeah, and if Berger's, I agree with that. And if Berger's not there, then get Suarez anyway. I love the lineup context for him, and he's hot. It reminds me of an issue I have in the Fangraphs staff league 13. I'm trying so hard to make the playoffs. I think I'm going to make it, but like I've been really working hard on this team, And I had Royce Lewis coming back, and I was like, man, he's my only third baseman. I can't possibly rely on just Royce Lewis.
No?
So I traded So I traded Junior Caminero for Manny Machado. And throughout this whole process, I claimed Eugenio Suarez for a buck. So now I have these three amazing third basemen. I can only play one, and I have Marcelo Zuna plugging up utility. So it's a good problem to have, but it's annoying every night when Lewis homers on my bench and then Suarez does. But anyway, it's a good problem to have. Third basemen are starting to come around. Suarez, Berger, get one of them. We're going to do, like I said, we're gonna talk about some individual players. I think the conversation can start with Gerrit Cole. So Chad brought up Gerrit Cole to me a while ago. Obviously, since then, Gerrit Cole had a pretty good start, a really good start, where finally it looked like his slider had returned, which is obviously huge for Gerrit Cole. I think most people might have Gerrit Cole at the current price that a lot of people might have Gerrit Cole at would be viewed at the beginning of the season before his injury as a major, major bargain.
Right.
So I think the question is for keeper leagues, if you do have Gerrit Cole at what would have looked like a bargain at the beginning of the year because he had the arm concerns and missed so much time, has he shown you enough at this point? Because people have trade deadlines coming up. One of the keeper cut leagues, trade deadlines tonight at midnight. Are you riding out Gerrit Cole? Are you holding on to him thinking he's fine? Are you taking the discount? Like, where are we with Gerrit Cole relative to the field?
Yeah, I mean, Cole, so part of the challenge for me with Cole and part of the reason I've been asking about him is I paid $28 for Cole in my CBS head-to-head, which is a, like you said, it's a discount, right? He would have gone, a healthy Gerrit Cole goes for $45-$50. So I was thrilled thinking when he comes back, I'll have an ace and a guy I can keep at, you know, still a pretty heavy discount for next season. He came back and, you know, you expect, like, it's not a surprise that Gerrit Cole came back and his first couple of starts were not great. He has to sort of work his way back. The issue was, like, his fourth start also wasn't great. And his seventh start also wasn't great. And all of a sudden, through, like, a good seven starts, he had really ugly numbers. Now, his last two starts have been better, but still, like, it's been so up and down. I mean, if you look at, like, his last, let's say, so let's go back to July 12th, because July 12th at Baltimore was his first quality start. And one thing to keep in mind with Cole is he's always been a guy who gets you a lot of innings. So when you're talking about his value, a big part of that was, like, he's going to get wins. He's going to get quality starts. He's going to throw a lot of innings. He hadn't really been doing that, but, you know, he had to work his way back. Fine. He gets two quality starts in a row at Tampa, or sorry, at Baltimore, then home for Tampa. Then gives up six runs in 5 2/3 to the Mets. Then only lasts 5 2/3 against Toronto and only strikes out 4. And then finally in his last start, 10 strikeouts, 1 earned run on 6 hits and 2 walks against Texas. But even that, he only went 5 1/3. So I don't know. I think, like, I was thinking I would trade him to a team that would keep him for next year. Just because I think he's still working his way back, I'm not finding that trade for him. And so I'm going to end up just holding him at least for this year. And I think the reality is I don't know what his keeper value is going to be, because maybe he has turned a corner in his last two starts and moving forward, we're going to see him just shutting people down. Like, that's, you know, his next start is coming up in a couple days at Detroit. He should be able to throw a gem at Detroit. I don't know what I will do. I guess my concern is right now that he looks like a good but not great starter, which is going to make him not a keeper. And so I'm just being patient, I think. And I don't think there's a lot else you can do, because I thought he would have good trade value to a team that was rebuilding, because they would put up with the struggles this year in order to have him next year. But he's playing his way out of being an obvious keeper, I think.
So let's say, Chad, the season ended today and the Yankees missed the playoffs. So the current sample of Gerrit Cole is all we have for next season. What I'm trying to figure out is, what would I value that pitcher at in 2025 auctions? What would I value that pitcher at in snake drafts coming up? Because he's coming off a start where he had 26 swinging strikes. And yet,
couple of odd walks. It did take him 90 pitches to get through it. He's coming off of an arm injury, which, like, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm tired of saying that, but, like, that concerns me. He has somehow avoided Tommy John, as far as I know, up until this point, at least for this incredible career that he's had, this Hall of Fame path that he's on. I'm not saying he's due for Tommy John, but, you know, his body has pitched probably more innings, I'd guess, than anybody else in the sport. Now he's coming off an injury, doesn't quite look like himself yet, just got 26 swing strikes. So if the season ended now, and this is all we had on Gerrit Cole, the Yankees didn't make the playoffs, or he didn't pitch in the playoffs, or whatever the case may be, how would you value him going into auctions next year?
Oh, man, that's it's a really hard one. Because, like, as you said, like, he's thrown a ton of innings. If you go back to 2015, which was his first full season, first time he went over, you know, he had 22 starts the year before that, his first full season, 2015, he has, in fact, thrown more innings than anyone else in baseball over that stretch. In a, you know, not totally surprising note, Max Scherzer is second and right behind him. And then Kyle Gibson, who's a totally different, you know, caliber of pitcher, is third. Aaron Nola is actually fourth, followed by Patrick Corbin. Not what I would have expected. But Cole, you know, Scherzer had been healthy and effective, one of the best pitchers in baseball, until last year when he suddenly wasn't, right? He had some injury issues in 2022. Last year, he wasn't that good. This year, he's only made 8 starts. And they haven't been great. Now, he is a lot older than Cole, right? He just turned 40 less than a month ago. Cole turns 34 in a couple weeks. He's not young. And if his season ended today, I think I would still be drafting him. I'd probably still be drafting him as a top 10 pitcher, because he probably still is, but I'd be way less confident about it. And he wouldn't be the guy who's, like, the clear cut number one, which I think he was. It was like him or Strider.
Going into this year, it was Strider for sure, but yeah. Otherwise, it's been Cole for a while. So rank these three starting pitchers going forward in keeper leagues. Like, if I could only pick one of these guys for the next, you know, however many years, what am I going with here? Obviously, Gerrit Cole. I'm going to add Jack Flaherty to that list, who's having an incredible season. Certainly isn't the caliber of Cole, or at least we don't think so. But he's having a good season nonetheless. And I'm going to throw in there, let's go with Pablo Lopez, who's much younger.
Yeah, I mean, Lopez is 28 and is having a really weird season. His ERA is higher than it's been in a long time, but his, you know, strikeouts look good. The walks look great. It's as low a career low walk rate. Boy, I'll say this: I don't think it's Flaherty. As good as he's been, I don't think he's my first choice of this group. His track record is just still too up and down. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming here, by the way, same price. That this is just like a, you know.
Yep. Yep.
This isn't like a Flaherty cost you a buck, and you paid 20 for Pablo and 40 for Cole kind of thing. So if it's all the same price, for next year, it's probably Cole, Pablo, Flaherty. For the future, longer term, it's probably Pablo, Cole, Flaherty.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. And folks, don't forget, Flaherty also young. He's 28 like Lopez. He'll turn 29 in October. But the Yankees apparently had a deal lined up for Jack Flaherty and turned it down because of concerns about, I want to say it was the back, which, yeah, like, you know, ask Kershaw or someone about back injuries for pitchers. Like, that's a tough one. So I think that would lead me to having the same rank. I think I would just prefer Cole, Pablo, Flaherty in keeper or in redraft. I think that's where I'm at. I do like Pablo Lopez, but I'm not out on Gerrit Cole yet, but the window of his elite pitching, no matter what, is closing. Father Time is undefeated. So another player that we wanted to chat about, especially as it relates to their keeper price, is Matt McClain, because Matt McClain really came out of nowhere last year. And I was avoiding him like the plague. That's not a brag. It was his BABIP and his strikeout rate that just scared me. I thought, sort of like Zach Geloff, this is not a guy I want to invest in. Sure enough, we don't know if I was right or not because he got hurt. And he's been hurt literally all season. And yet there's plenty of folks out there who can keep Matt McLean for like a 26th round pick or whatever it might be, because they added him as a free agent last year, kept him, and now his price is only going to go up so much in a lot of different formats, or not new, where I doubt he gets tagged with any arbitration unless he really comes back and lights the world on fire in September. But if you're in a league that keeps, you know, quite a few players, are you still considering Matt McLean, or is this like a time to reset on this guy? He was hurt all year and his strikeout rate and his BABIP were out of control when he broke out.
Yeah. I mean, in auto new leagues, I have two McLeans. I have a $9 McLean in League One, which is 4x4. And then the Food and Travel League, also a 4x4. I have a $16 McLean. And I think the easy way to answer this is I'm keeping, I can't see any world where I don't keep the $9 version. He'll be 11 next year. That's fine. The $16 version, which will be 18 next year, is iffier. And the way I would look at it is this is like, he is, you know, McLean is 25. He just turned 25. So next year will be his age 25 season. Really. This is really his age 24 season. He basically has to be treated like an elite prospect. Right. I mean, and so I think it's like, if you're looking at the price that you would pay for a junior Caminero, right? I mean, maybe that's the right thing, is like, he's effectively a prospect who has, you know, doesn't have the same pedigree in terms of the history that a guy like Caminero does. But I mean, you look at McLean's background, he was great in 2022 in Double A. He was great in 2023 in AAA and then got the call and was great in Major League Baseball. And so I think you just sort of have to treat him like that. And so in the low double digits, I think he's an easy keep, right? If you again, think about a top, you know, top 10 to 20 prospect who is basically guaranteed an opening day job. That's how I view him. And so in the low teens, I think he's an easy keep in auto new. In a, you know, a 20th or later round pick, he's probably an easy keep in other formats. You get up into the high teens, you get up in terms of an auto new or a salary, you get into, you know, the 15th round or earlier in terms of a keeper cost, it gets a little bit harder for me. I think that his ADP will make a 15th round pick look good, and so I think his trade value might still be high. But that's sort of where I am, is I think, you know, that $9 version I'm keeping, the $16 version, I don't know, which means maybe I should shop him.
Yeah, I think that's the right window to have there. And again, to bring up our trade deadlines, yours may have already passed, but if you're holding on to Matt McLean thinking like, oh, he's about to go on rehab, you know, I might get something soon. I got some reservations about that. I mean, let me provide some context first, because we did just dive right into him. But Matt McLean, Cincinnati Reds, played a lot of, I believe it was third base last year. Does that sound right?
He played shortstop mostly, right? He only played second and short.
Okay, so middle infielder. Yeah. For some reason, I had third base in my head. 864 OPS through 403 plate appearances. He stole 14 bags and had 16 homers in that 403 plate appearances. But I brought up the BABIP, which was 385, and I brought up the strikeout rate, which was 28.5%. And it's not like his exit velocities were going to make up for that. The exit velocity was middle of the pack, 89.3 miles an hour. So why would I still not expect to get much from him this year? Well, first of all, he had shoulder surgery. Now, he's had a lot of time to recover, right? I mean, he's been out literally the entire season. But then on his way back, he suffered a stress reaction in his rib cage, which, as we know, that's a sensitive injury that can take some time to come back. And then look at the Reds lineup. Like, I'm sure the Reds will find a way to play him if they think he's ready and you know, ready to go, because he's a part of their future and they want to get him in there. But, like, I don't see an obvious spot with Noelvi Marte back. Now, Noelvi Marte's been terrible, so maybe he gets sent down. But I think the most likely scenario is this rehab stint that Matt McClain is on is just more his spring training. And then next year, you know, he'll be ready to go to be on the major league roster. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but with a month and a half to go, I don't know if I expect to see Matt McClain again this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can be on rehab assignment for up to 30 days before you have to be activated or optioned. So
it depends on when he starts that. Okay.
And they just delayed
it. I don't think he started yet.
He was supposed to start and then he didn't. So one reason they may have waited is to allow him to do his full 30 days basically up until the end of the minor league season. Because the AAA season ends like a week before, or 2 weeks before the major league season.
I'm looking it up now. It's something like that.
I think he will likely be back, but maybe not until the last week or two of the year. Yeah. Once he is back, I mean, yeah, he's, I don't know where he fits because India's bounced back and looks more and more like a part of the long-term answer there. They're not. Yeah, unless they option Noel V and then maybe move Ellie to short or to third. I don't really know what the fit is, but and that is a little concerning even for next year, right? Like, does he become a third baseman? Because in like auto new leagues, there's a good chance he starts next year with no positional eligibility. If he doesn't get enough games in, or if they aren't all at the right positions, he could start next year as util only. So we'll have to see.
I think his saving grace for next year is I kind of expect Jonathan India to get traded. I was a little surprised he didn't get traded at the deadline, but his contract's got to be up soon. I'm trying to look that up right now. Signed a 2-year. So he's still, I don't know. It's not loading to me. I think he's still arbitration eligible, but the end's coming for Jonathan India. I don't think they're a team that needs to re-up him. So I could see him getting traded. That would be his saving grace. But I agree with you. There's at least right now some concern about his playing time going forward. But if he performs like he did after he got called up last year, it's not going to be a problem. He was awesome.
India signed for this year and next year, but he's still arbitration eligible in 2026. So he's still around for two more seasons, unless, like you said, they trade him.
Yeah, I'm like surprised he's somehow still a Red. I feel like Jonathan India is just one of those guys who's been in trade rumors for so long now, and he just continues to hang on, despite the fact that they keep just signing and finding infielders all the time. He has survived the test of time.
Yeah.
So, folks, we want to continue on with this list of random players and talking about their keeper value, but we're going to take our first break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Keep or Cut podcast. We're breaking down some players who broke down this year, at least so far. Cole, Matt McClain, and trying to figure out what is their value for next year, which I think is helpful context, especially if your trade deadline has not passed. Now, granted, this episode's not going to air for another couple days until August 18th. So by then, a lot of trade deadlines have passed. But nevertheless, what do these players value? What are these players' values going forward, I think, is an interesting conversation. Now, the next name on our list is a shortstop, but I kind of want to save that conversation to break down five different shortstops who I'm having a hard time separate. And instead, dive into some pitchers. We haven't, we've talked about Gerrit Cole. I don't know. I feel like we talk about hitters a lot, so let's talk about some pitchers. Jesús Luzardo. Chad, what the heck are we doing with this guy? He was the number one pitching prospect in baseball, and he, as a professional, looked really good. Like he's put together starts where you're like, Jesús Luzardo is awesome. He has just not done it and stayed healthy enough for long enough stretches of time for us to view him as some consensus top 20 pitcher. I think he maybe was that for a very small period of time. But for example, I have a $9 Jesús Luzardo in the staff league. He's going to be $11. Nobody's going to put arbitration dollars. Please, everybody put arbitration dollars on Jesús Luzardo. I feel like 11 is still reasonable for the upside, but is this rose-colored glasses? Like, are we done here?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, 2022, 2023, he was, you know, throwing over 96 miles per hour. He made 50 starts, 279 innings over those 2 years with 3.48 ERA, 3.40 FIP, 3.50X FIP, 3.55 Sierra, like mid threes across the board. He was striking out 10.5 batters per nine, a 28.7% strikeout rate over that stretch with a 7.9% walk rate. Then this year,
The velocity is down about a mile and a half, which is a lot. And those strikeouts have just dried up. The walk rate is actually pretty similar, but an 8% walk rate doesn't work with a 21.2% strikeout rate like it does with a 28.1% strikeout rate like he had last year. And I don't know. I mean, it'd be one thing if I felt like he was working his way back and getting better, but he's hurt again. It's not like he showed super clear progress when he was healthy. I suppose it's possible. Like, his last five starts of the year, his strikeouts were way down. Now, it's possible that those were because of the new injury, but I don't have any real reason to think that that's the case. So, and his season is basically over, right? I mean, the last report on him was a week or so ago that he was going to be shut down for at least six more weeks. That's the season. So we're going to have to keep or cut him based on what we've seen so far. I don't think I want him at $10.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, depending on what kind of league you're in, there's not a whole lot of win potential in Miami, although I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded. It's a back injury that's keeping him out this long. And that, again, not to keep harping on the same thing here, that is very concerning to me, especially for a guy who has dealt with injuries. And it's not like he's a 24-year-old anymore. He's going to be 27 going into next season. A lot of pitchers, in some cases, have had their best seasons by then. So I think I'm with you. I think it's tempting. $11, man. Sometimes I leave the auction and I've got like $20 left over. And would I want to add an $11 Lizardo and just have $9 free? I think so, because I still think there's potential there. So it's a tough one. I think if you have him for any more than that, I mean, $12, $13, $15 Lizardo, I'm sure there's plenty of expensive Lizardos out there. Yeah. He's got to be a cut at this point.
Yeah. And I think if I had him, I'll say this, at $10, $12, something like that, he's the kind of guy who I think I'd cut there, even if I ended up bidding $9, $10, $11 on him at auction.
Yeah.
That's because, and I know this, like, it seems silly, like, well, if you're going to end up with him at $11 anyways, why wouldn't you just keep him at $11? But, like, there's a difference, and the difference is the option value in the auction, right? If the auction's going on and I find out, hey, an $11 Lizardo is sort of the best I can do, okay. But I don't want to lock – he's not good enough to want to be locked into that ahead of the auction, because there may be somebody more interesting. Or the auction may break in such a way that I get great pitching and I'd rather spend that $11 on Matt McClain and try to get something out of my middle infield. So I want the option value there more than I want Lizardo in double figures.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. It's going to be a tough decision for me to make. I already have a lot of money, I think, involved in my pitching, just to continue to look at my individual situation. So I think he's probably going to be a cut, but some tough decisions maybe made there for Jesus Lizardo. The other pitching name, I think everyone would agree, has a lot more upside, and I think he's going to get cut in a ton of hot new leagues based on the prices that he was going at in the auctions that I partook in before the season started, and that is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He's working his way back. We should see him before the season is done, but he's working his way back from a rotator cuff strain in his throwing arm. That's a tough injury for a pitcher, and he was very good. I'll defend Yamamoto. I think he was very, very good. I think that adjustment is incredibly difficult, and he's still so young, but he wasn't top three pitcher in baseball. Right. So Yamamoto, where do you feel comfortable with him?
I
don't know.
2.92 ERA with FIP, CR, everything backing that up. Over 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. Is that not? And on a team where wins are easy to come by, that's not an elite pitcher?
Well, I didn't say elite. I chose my words carefully there, top three, because, I mean, Chad, you were in auctions with me where he was the most expensive pitcher that went.
Yeah.
When players like Corbin Burns were available. So, like, I think there's you can pay top 10, top 15 price for a pitcher, and I'd put Yamamoto probably in my top 10. I want to see how he looks coming off a shoulder injury. I don't think that's anything to sneeze at, but there's a big difference, I think, in price when it comes to a top three, you know, like what Skuball is going to be next year versus someone who's top 10 and now has a shoulder concern.
Yeah, I mean, so looking at this, he is 14th in MLB in ERA among pitchers with 70-plus innings. He's actually, more accurately, he is 14th because one of the guys ahead of him is Derek Law, which is not a thing I expected, but that's because he has 60 relief appearances, and so he's thrown 70-plus innings already. So 13th. And yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the guys ahead of him, if I was drafting next year, so here are the guys ahead of him. You'll tell me, you can tell me, would you draft this guy over Yamamoto?
Okay.
Number one in ERA, 70-plus innings, is Brian Wu.
No. God, no.
Ronaldo Lopez.
No.
Paul Skeens.
Yes.
Tarek Skubal.
Yeah.
Chris Sale.
I mean, look, we're a keeper league podcast, so obviously I'd rather Yamamoto in a keeper league. But if we're just saying, like, you know, for next season, I think I'm going to go with Sale, man. I've been beating this drum forever that he's still an ace. He just needs to stay in the field. And finally, he stays on the field. He's too good. I'll go with Sale. Okay. It's close, though.
Corbin Burns.
I'm going to go with Yamamoto.
Zach Wheeler.
I don't want to be left holding the bag on Wheeler, so I'm going to go with Yamamoto there.
Tobias Myers.
I'll take Yamamoto.
Hunter Green.
Is that becoming a conversation? I'm still going to take Yamamoto, but Hunter Green has been unbelievable.
Yeah. Ranger Suarez.
He pitches in Cincinnati. You know I'm not taking Ranger Suarez.
Ronel Blanco.
Yeah, no.
Logan Gilbert.
I'm still taking Yamamoto, but I'm very happy with all the Gilbert I have.
Yeah. So then, guys we haven't mentioned who could go before it, just because they haven't been better by ERA by these numbers so far this year. Cole.
I take Yamamoto, but I get it.
Strider.
Tommy, he's going to be limited. How many innings do we expect from him next year?
I don't know.
And you could say the same thing about McClanahan, right? I mean,
yeah, McClanahan will be back at least. So he is also, like, the point is, you said he's not a top three. You've so far mentioned exactly three: Skeens, Skuball, and Sale, that you would take over Yamamoto.
Perfect. I'm a man of my word.
When you said he's not top three, you've got him in that, like, 4, 5, 6 range.
Yeah, I guess I do. Yeah. So then the question is, at what price? What do we feel comfortable with? Because there are people out there with Yamamoto that's going to be like $40+, which I know you're not someone who's inclined to keep any pitcher really at that price. But what is going to be a reasonable keep for Yamamoto? Because this injury sucks. We have a much better idea right now if he didn't go down.
Yeah, I think the big question is how he recovers from that injury, because you worry about, you know, any arm injuries, like if it lingers, then gets worse, then he needs surgery, and well, like the path it could take is concerning. But I don't know. I think the reality is, if you cut him at, let's say, $45 or something like that, there's a good chance that we're back in the same situation this year that we were last year, which is there isn't a whole lot of exciting pitching in the draft. And so Yamamoto is the only guy, and if he's the only guy, the price is going to be high. Now, it is possible that, like, Cole is thrown back. Corbin Burns may have sort of underperformed his value, especially from a strikeout perspective, and so he might get thrown back. And so you might start to build up enough starting pitching in the draft to counteract that. But I think the question with Yamamoto is less about his price and more about what you need. Because if you need an ace, like if you're going to cut him and need to go buy an ace at the draft, you're going to end up paying that price for him.
Yeah, that that makes total sense. And I think that's what happened to people anyway. The cut deadline happened. They needed an ace. And like you said, Yamamoto was the only one there. So I could see that cycle definitely happening again. So maybe those people who bid all that money on Yamamoto, even though he ended up getting hurt, they're still kind of coming out ahead, because maybe a lot of Yamamotos are going to be held on to going into next season. We'll see. We'll see. And what's nice is we don't have to make these decisions now. We are going to get more of a sample size on Cole. We may see Matt McLean. We're not going to see Jesus Luzardo, but we will see, hopefully, Yoshinobu Yamamoto in that shoulder, which is going to be really important for those players and how we determine if we're going to keep or cut them or not. Now, I'm going to bring up a name that came up in our very first episode, Anthony Santander, who, I mean, like, he's always been good, right? I mean, he's had a couple of maybe one or two 30 homer seasons already. He's been a pretty consistent source of power despite playing in that huge park. But man, he is on a whole other level this season. Is Anthony Santander somebody who at, I don't know, I'd have to look up his ADP and I'll do it while you're talking. Is that somebody you feel comfortable keeping? Like, what's the price range you're going to pay to keep a corner infielder outfielder, an outfielder who I know outfield is thin, but like, this is a clear career year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he never has a season like this again. So where do you feel comfortable with Anthony Santander?
I think he was undervalued in drafts this year, and therefore I'm likely to end up keeping him most places. Not because I think he's established, like, he's sort of the same guy. His walk rate is down a little bit. His strikeout rate's down a little bit. His BABIP is actually way down. His home run per fly ball rate is up, but it's not crazy out of line with like his 2020 season. If you look at his StatCast data, his exit velocity is actually down. His hard hit rate is down. His barrel rate is up. But a lot of his underlying numbers are actually just not hugely different from past years. And so but I think the important thing to keep in mind here is if you look at what he did in 2022 and 2023, across those two seasons, and he basically played a full season in both, he averaged 30 and a half home runs. He had 61 home runs over those two seasons with a .249 average, .322 on base, .464 slugging. I think that's just who he is. I think this year the ball is flying out of the park at a higher rate for him. I don't think that'll necessarily continue. I think this year, his BABIP is way down now. And hopefully it'll bounce back for next year, but not in a way that's going to bounce back and like make him more valuable. The one thing that gives me some hope that this may be a new era for him is his fly ball rate, which was 49.7% over the last 2 years, is 57.7% this year. Maybe that's the difference, right? Maybe he's just elevating the ball better and more effectively, and that is driving up the home run total, and maybe that's sustainable. So that is the one thing I see that I'm like, oh, I think he might, maybe there is another level here. But in general, I think he's just sort of the same guy he's been. He's just having a good year. But I think he was undervalued in drafts anyways, so I'm happy to keep him at that price, especially because there's at least a possibility that that new fly ball rate is the difference.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, and that answers the question. He was basically a 12th rounder. Like, he was firmly in the 12th round. I think he was around ADP 136. I can confirm that. Yeah, ADP 136. This is over on the NFBC, which I believe is all five outfielder leagues. So maybe that played into that, pushing him up a little bit. If you're in a three outfielder league, maybe he gets pushed down a little bit. But you're saying if you got him in the 12th round this year, you're happy to keep him at that price going into next year.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's fair value. I will be interested to see where he ends up going, because I think the pendulum might now swing in the complete other direction, where this guy is going to be going as like a sixth, seventh round pick. He's going to reach 40 homers. He's going to be a 40 home run hitter with tons of RBI in a great, great lineup that is clearly only getting better. So I could see the hype train leaving the station and Anthony Santander going for a pretty penny, which means that's even more of a value. But
yeah,
he's
18th on the player, but he's 18th on the player rater. Right. So there's almost no chance he's not a top 100 pick next year. Right.
Oh, that's for sure.
Well,
But easily. If he's a top 100 pick, then if I could keep him for an eighth round value, he's worth keeping.
Sure.
Now, I don't think you're wrong to say that he may be somewhere in the top 100 that is overinflating his value. And so there is some point at which he's a value to keep, but he's a better value to trade. And that is, I think, something to watch depending on what you paid for him at drafts. But if you paid sort of regular market price for him last year, he's a keeper.
Yeah, and you should feel comfortable paying that next year, because if you liked him going into this year, well, you're going to really like him going into next year.
Yeah.
Again, as long as the price isn't that crazy. When I say the pendulum's going to swing in the other direction, I don't mean that's a reason not to keep him, because you have him at a value. But I think next year, there's a chance this guy's price range is just too high. Yeah, he gives you literally no speed. The batting average is going to be, it's going to be a small net negative, but it's going to be a net negative. I mean, right now he's at 242, so that's pretty bad. He is going to give you, you know, plenty of pop, plenty of RBI. But is he going to be worth what he ends up going for in new drafts next year? I don't know about that, but if you're keeping him for a 12th or an 11th or something like that, then yeah, there's enough value there, I think, to hold on depending on who else you are, you're rostering. So folks, we're going to take our second break, and when we come back, we're going to break down a bunch of different shortstops. Welcome back, folks. Keeper Cut Podcast, episode 147. We're talking about keeper values for next year and just some guys who have dealt with injuries, a player who is having a career year in Anthony Santander. But now I want to talk about shortstops, some who have dealt with injuries, some who are having career years, some who are certainly not having career years. And Chad,
it's a form of a career year.
What's that?
It's a form of a career year.
Sure. Yeah, I guess it's not the conventional way of thinking about a career year.
We just assume career year means career best, but career worst is still a career year.
So I think the best way to do this is to talk about all five of these guys individually. And then at the end, we'll rank them for keeper leagues. Okay. As if their prices were all the same, which for some of them, they're going to be pretty similar. For one of them, their price is way more expensive, most likely, than the rest. And I want to start with the second name I have in the notes there, Chad, and that is O'Neill Cruz, who I think we all thought this year, as long as O'Neill Cruz stays healthy, which he has, we'll finally have an answer. Like, is this guy elite, high end, or not? And honestly, I feel like this year has almost told us absolutely nothing other than he still strikes out a ton and he can't figure out lefties. But boy, can he hit the ball hard. And we could have said all those things before the season started. This is a really weird player to value right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he just sort of is what he is.
And he's only 25.
Yeah. And okay, so that's true. And there is, you know, maybe he finds a way to reduce the chase rate, reduce the swinging strikes, and put the ball in play more. But I don't know. I sort of look at him like, I think he's just going to be a guy who struggles versus lefties, strikes out a lot, hits for good power, and steals a bunch of bases. And he's going to be a 30-20 type, I think, 30-15 maybe, which is super valuable. And he's able to do it despite the strikeouts he's a pretty high BABIP hitter.
For sure.
This year it's 355. I don't know if he's going to be that high in the future, but I think he'll still be a pretty high BABIP hitter. But if he is like a, let's say he's a 25 home run, 15 stolen base, 250 hitter. At shortstop, that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, shortstop's pretty deep. I mean, I think the BABIP could easily stick. If anybody can hit for a high BABIP, it's this guy in Ely De La Cruz, where they're hitting the ball so hard. They're hitting on the ground a fair amount, certainly a lot in Ellie's case, and they're incredible athletes. They're super quick, right? But I guess my point in bringing him up and saying I don't know how much this told me is, like, I still feel as I did before the season, like, this has been a fine year. You're right. 30-15 with a low-ish average is still plenty valuable, but I'm still left thinking there's so much potential here. And I feel like it hasn't completely been answered one way or another if he's ever going to reach that, but it sounds like you think he has.
It's not that I necessarily think he has, like, absolutely maxed out, that there's not possibly another level here. I just don't think you could keep assuming or waiting on it. I think you have to draft him to be what he is. And now we're going to compare him in a minute to a few other guys, and we'll talk when we talk about all of them about where they sit on the player radar, because three of the five shortstops you want to talk about are ranked 73, 79, and 80, like really, really close to each other. And I could see saying, I'll take Cruz highest of that group because there might be another level to his game. But it's kind of true of the other guys in that group too. So, I don't know. I think that there will be another round of hype on him next year, and I'll probably end up being out on him because there's going to be another round of like, now that he's had a full season, wait till he get, you know, now he can start to show improvement and blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm not ready to buy into that.
Yeah. So on that front, I definitely agree with you. And I brought up before we started this segment that one of these players is a lot more expensive, most likely, than the others. And it wasn't O'Neal Cruz that I was thinking of, but he is still probably going to be pretty pricey. He's a tough call. I think in the listener league too, I traded away a lot of my good keeper options because I'm going for it in that one. But I have O'Neal Cruz for like, I want to say a seventh or sixth next year. And honestly, I think that's a cut. So maybe I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I think there's still a lot to be determined for O'Neal Cruz. I don't feel too comfortable one way or another in my analysis of him. So I think ultimately that'll mean I'll be like you. I'm just gonna avoid him. So another name on this list is one that is also polarizing. And that's Anthony Volpe, who like just had a fine, it was hard to make, another guy who was kind of hard to make what to make of his rookie season. He basically went 2020. He, you know, won a gold glove for what that's worth. And he's a shortstop for the Yankees. Like, that's a great place to be. He's got a decent lineup around him. Well, you know, two great hitters and then a bunch of terrible ones. But he has had a season of up and downs. It's been a roller coaster. He got super hot recently, but then even more recently, he went, what, like 1-for-36 or some horrendous stretch like that. This is another guy who is like a top five prospect in baseball, smoked the minor leagues, has all the tools, just still hasn't consistently put it together at the major league level. So where are you at with Anthony Volpe? I also have him in that keeper league, and he's at a much cheaper price, like, you know, a 26th or something. So I'll obviously be keeping him. Should I be excited, or are we starting to get concerned about Volpe?
I mean, I would still be excited because, like, if your concern is that what he's done this year is who he's going to be, he was the guy who was 80th on the player radar that I just mentioned, right? So, like, if you have him for a 26-round pick, like, he could fall off from where he is this year, even. And there's, like, he made some strides this year, right? Like, he changed his approach to be a little bit more aggressive and was also making more contact. He brought his strikeout rate way down. He's walking less because he's been more aggressive, but you'll take that with the change in strikeouts he's had. His home run per fly ball rate is down, and that's maybe the biggest concerning sign, and it's tied to the fact that his barrel rate is down, his hard hit rate is down. But it isn't super crazy to imagine those things coming back. And now this is where I think format matters a lot. Because that player rater ranking is for 5x5. And in 5x5, he's going to still end up with 15 home runs, and he's going to push 30 stolen bases this year. So we talked about Cruz being a guy, you know, maybe he's a 25-15 with like a 250 average. Volpe's a little bit lower average, but he might be 15-25 instead of 25-15, but with a 240 average instead of 250, something like that. However, he's pretty low on base because he doesn't walk a ton. And so in like an auto-do points format, he's a little less exciting. And that is where I'd be a little bit more concerned. He's putting up 4.49 points per game in Fangraphs points leagues. And I don't know that I'm as excited about what he might be able to do in terms of another level in that format. So in 5x5, even in OBP leagues, where you're getting, you know, home runs and stolen bases are independent categories, I think you're fine keeping him at the price he's cost. And like I said, I think the fact that he made some adjustments and showed some improvement, that we've seen more solid contact from him last year, and therefore there's a possibility that comes back. Like, there's things that you can look at and see coming together and him putting it all together in a way that takes him to another level. I just think the floor is a lot lower, a lot riskier in like an Honor New Points League where, I mean, at 4.49 points per game, like he's not helping you.
Right.
So in a 5x5 league, he's helping you. In an Honor New Points League, he's really not.
Yeah, and it's not just the scoring format that I think you got to think about with Anthony Volpe. It's also the roster construction. Now, in leagues that have middle infield, which is, you know, a lot new, like, all right, he's got value there. But I'm shortstop is super, super deep. My issue with Volpe, and I want to preface this with saying, if you have him for a value that I have, like a 26th round pick or whatever it actually is, like Chad said, that's just a no-brainer. It doesn't cost you anything. Just keep him. Like, the player you would use on that pick instead is going to be a joke. With all of that said, as much as he made the strides and strikeout rate and stuff like that, he needs to run even more than he is to warrant starting with just a 4.2% barrel rate. I mean, that barrel rate is at less than half of what it was last year. He's going to struggle to consistently hit for power and give you anything there. If that's how rare he's barreling the ball up, it's going to limit his ability to hit for a high BABIP because the balls he's putting in play are just simply not that hard. So I have some concerns about Volpe where, like, I need him to run basically, he needs to be like a 40 stolen base guy for me to start him with a barrel rate that low. And then if he becomes that, then we're talking like a Nico Horner type who we've seen in the past is an incredibly valuable fantasy asset. At the same time, until I start seeing that, I have concerns about him as my starting shortstop in some formats where, like, maybe middle infield isn't an option because you are going to be the weakest guy at shortstop unless it's a 45-man league.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think, I don't know, I think in... Again, in 5x5, I think, I don't know. In 5x5, he is the 14th shortstop on the player rater. So yeah, I guess if there is no middle infield position, that's fine. But like, if there is a middle infield position, he's a good middle infield option for you. And so that's where the format thing comes in for me. It's like, I think at some level, what we're seeing from them this year is sort of his floor. Like, this is, he's either settled it as this, and this is just sort of what he's going to be, or he's going to start to find another level. I don't think he's going to fall off from here. And compare that, though, being 14th and 5x5 in the player rater to his points per game among shortstops is 23rd, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 23rd. And in his company, if you look at guys, that's among guys with like 150 or more plate appearances. And if you look at the guys he's around, the guys, the three names ahead of him are Mason Wynn, Jeremy Pena, and Willie Castro. The three names behind him are Jose Iglesias, Nico Horner, and Xander Bogaerts. And I do think in that format, I could easily make a case that Horner and Bogaerts are better bets for next year than Volpe. So he may move himself out of being even a usable middle infielder in that format. Whereas I think in 5x5, he sort of locked down that value.
Yeah, but so I agree. It's hard to push back on the player rater when he's that high. And we're talking about middle infield because, like, yes, I mean, there's got to be a spot for him on a team. But it's a limited skill set at this point in his career where it may not be the right skill set for your team. Like, that is largely driven by two things. It's driven by the speed that he's had. He has 20 stolen bases. Not a lot of shortstops are fast, but not quite at the mark that Volpe's at. And the other thing is the run scored, where for a huge portion of the year, he was batting leadoff, but he hit his way out of the leadoff spot. And those runs have started to trend down again. So that figure is a little misleading to me. And I need to see more from Volpe. The good news is, like all the names in this list, he's super young. He has as much potential as anybody, and it could come together. But the tinkering has improved some things, and I think it's clearly hurt other things. And I need to see that barrel rate go up before I'm going to get too invested in Anthony Volpe as a part of my future. So we made it through two of these names, Volpe and Cruz. I want to do Zach Neto next. Zach Neto is having an incredible season. He just keeps chugging along. For a lot of time, it was empty power and speed. That's how they were putting it on the podcast I was listening to earlier, FBT, where it's like there weren't runs and there weren't RBI because the Angels are so bad. But I think Zach Neto has just been so hot that, like, at some point that doesn't matter anymore. Like, he's going to be, what, 25-25 this season? And he's so young. I mean, if folks remember, he was just a rookie last year. He got called up very quickly, got drafted and was called up. And now in his second year in the bigs, he's tearing the cover off the ball. So where are you at with Zach Neto, Chad?
I mean, I love Neto. I was high on him last year. I really like the skill set. He controls the zone pretty well. He puts the ball in play. He has a decent barrel rate. It's not like a great barrel rate, but it's a decent barrel rate. He has a decent hard hit rate. Not great, but a decent hard hit rate. He's got a 111 max EV, so he's capable of tapping into some high-end power. I just sort of like everything that's there, and I think that, you know, one of the things we've heard from teams recently is that, you know, letting guys develop at the major league level is valuable. You have your theoretically, you have your best coaches, and you also have your best teammates who can help out at the majors versus the minors. And the Angels seem to be really leaning into that. And both Neto and now Nolan Schanuel look like they might be examples of that working out pretty well. Now, you still have the issue that the Angels don't look like they're going to be very good anytime soon. But maybe that's not the case. Maybe they're headed the right direction. I don't know. But I really like what I've seen from him. I mentioned before that on the player radar, three of those guys were between 73 and 80. One of the guys we're going to talk about is way further down the list. Neto is way further up. He's like 43rd or something on that list. So I think, and he also, from an ADP standpoint, was the cheapest of these guys, I think. His ADP on FanTrax. Yeah, his ADP on FanTrax among shortstops is 22nd. Pick 268. Volpe was going pick 122. So, like, if you're looking at, do I keep Neto for a, you know, 20th round pick or Volpe for a 10th? Yeah, I'll take Neto for sure. Even at the same price, yeah. I'd prefer Neto.
Yeah, it's tough to push back on that, and I don't know what the numbers are. And you mentioned, like, you know, his barrel rate is not elite, but it's fine at 9%, and I'd agree with that. I'd be curious to see what his barrel rate is since he broke out, because I think that's, you know, it's a smaller sample, it's less indicative maybe, but he's clearly turned a corner in his approach at the plate and how he's hitting the ball, and I bet that number is a lot higher. Since July 1st, arbitrary date, sure, but again, this is a young player, still basically within his first 365 days in Major League Baseball. And since then, he has a 156 WRC plus. He's batting 300, tons of pop. The strikeout to walk ratio, 25 to 13. Okay. And that's with 11 stolen bases and only caught once. So he's giving you a little bit of everything. The hit tool seems super safe. I think he's an interesting contrast to O'Neill Cruz, because I think the potential range of outcomes for 2025 O'Neill Cruz is much wider. Like you said, the floor could be pretty low. Whereas for Neto, I think it's safer. There's a smaller range of outcomes, and I think it's going to be pretty good. We're talking about a probable 2020 guy, not a lot of runs, not a lot of RBI. But Zach Neto, I like him too. I'm in on Neto. The fourth name here, Chad, is Ezequiel Tovar. You brought him up there, so we can dive into him. He's a player we've talked about a lot on the show, so I don't know how much we need to say, but he is having a nice season despite literally never taking a walk. It would have killed this guy to walk ever. But Tovar, are you still high on him, as high as you were at the beginning of the season? I would assume so.
Yeah, I like Tovar a lot as well. I have him in a few places, and I'm planning to keep him. His price was around Neto's price. Tovar doesn't bring the same amount of speed that these other guys do, and so that hurts him in 5x5. He hits for a higher average, but like I said, he doesn't walk, and so in the OBP formats, he doesn't do as much for you.
It's a 273 average and a 296 OBP. Very rarely do you see those numbers that close.
But like, if you look at like a points format where on-base percentage gets mixed with other things, he is doing enough that he is still at 5.06 points per game in auto new leagues, which is actually ahead of Neto, who's at 4.93. And actually right behind O'Neill Cruz at 5.23. So I like Tovar. I have concerns that his approach is less sustainable than some of these other guys, but he's also the youngest of them. Like, we're talking about all these guys being young, and they are all young, but he's the youngest of them.
Notably, too, right?
Well, let's see. He's only a few months younger than Neto.
Sure.
So Neto the others, is,
I think.
Yeah.
How old is Volpe, actually? Maybe not. Maybe it's just that Cruz is the old man of the group.
Yeah, no. He's only a couple months younger than Volpe. He's only a few months younger than Neto. And then Cruz is a few...
Cruz is going to be 26 next year.
Yeah. So he is the youngest, not by a ton. I do like him. I think, I don't know, we'll discuss this more when we get into the rankings of them, but I do think the approach, like, he chases a ton. He swings at everything. He does not walk. And he's got to find, I think, some improvement there. On the other hand, the improvement he needs to make might be the easiest improvement of these guys. Like, he doesn't need to change his skill set. He just needs to get, like, work on his patience. Now, I say that's the easiest thing to work on, like it's, you know, a breeze, but...
But that's a lot easier to do, I would assume, than magically hitting the ball harder or something like that. So I'm with you on that one. And you know, I would hold out a lot of hope that he's going to give me a ton of speed, but he did manage 11 stolen bases with an OBP of just 287 last season. Now, he did get caught stealing 5 times. That's a terrible rate. 11 stolen bases in 16 attempts is not great. But, you know, it's all about intent, right? Actually, he's been worse this year.
He's worse. 4 steals and 4 caught. I think he's done running.
Just keep going. Just keep trying, because we don't care when you get caught as fantasy managers. We just want you to try. 72nd percentile sprint seed. So maybe. I don't know. You're probably right, though. He has not had the best judgment on when to go so far in his major league career. Well, Chad, that takes us to our last player here, and that's Bo Bichette, who I really don't want to give up on. He was struggling when everybody in the Blue Jays was struggling, and it feels like he missed out on the magic of Vlad cutting his hair, right? Because then George Springer kind of started to hit, and even Dalton Varsho hit like a home run the other day. But Bo Bichette's hurt again, and I don't want to give up, but I'm starting to get some major concerns. And I have to start with that. If I'm going to bring up the barrel rate for Anthony Volpe, I have to bring it up for Bo Bichette, who doesn't walk much either, with a 4.5% barrel rate this season. So where are we at with Bo Bichette? Do you think he's going to be a Blue Jay next year? And I don't know. Based on this year's numbers, does he rank last? And I guess we can get into the rankings here of this group, because going into the year, he was first.
Yeah, he was first by a lot. The reality is, for keeper leagues, you don't have to worry about it because you're not keeping him. Like, he's going to be too expensive to keep. But man, I don't know. I don't get it. He's 26. He turns 27 right before the season starts next year. So he's older than these guys, but not like, he's not 30. He's not 35. He's a kid still. He hasn't had major changes in his plate discipline. Like, his contact in outside the zone is down, but his overall contact rate is similar. His chase rate is down a little. Like, there isn't any like red flag in his plate discipline. His strikeout rate is fine. His walk rate is actually up a little bit from last year and the year before. He just isn't hitting the ball as hard, I guess. I mean, that's, but even that, his hard hit rate was 44.9 last year. It's 43.3 this year. So it's his barrel rate that's way down. And maybe that's because when he is hitting the ball hard, he's not doing it in the right launch angles, but like, his launch angle hasn't really changed much. It's 7.8 for his career. It's 7.5 this year. His max EV
low though.
It is, but he's succeeded in this range for years, right? Like, this isn't like he had like a great rookie year and we all bought into the hype and then he fell off. Like, he's been excellent since 2019, really. As a rookie, he played 46 games in 2019 and had 384 WOBA. And he has taken a step back since then, but his WOBA the last 4 years has been between 347 and 354 every single year. And now this year he's fallen off, and it's like the home run per fly ball rate is way down, the BABIP is way down, but the stuff that underlies that isn't off by a crazy amount, except the barrel rate. And I don't get why the barrel rate is so low when he's still hitting the ball hard just as often. Yeah, I don't have a good explanation for what happened to him, because he sort of looks like the same guy as I dig in closer.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think I can't remember if you mentioned this, so I apologize if I'm repeating information, but something that immediately sticks out to me, and I looked at this because I saw his expected batting average against fastballs. This is a guy who's hit every pitch type really well throughout his career, at least in terms of batting average, right? It's something we should be able to expect from Bo Bichette. He's always hit fastballs well. His expected batting average this season against fastballs is 290. What was his actual average against fastballs? Was 230. And he should have done better against all pitch types, although it was still bad for breaking and off speed. So I was curious, what is his BABIP? This is a dude who, BABIP in 2019, 368. 2020, 352, 2021, 339, 2022, 347, 2023, 355. Then we get to 2024 and he has a BABIP of 266. The heck happened there? So there may be a little bit of a luck element for Bo Bichette, or a lack thereof for this season. Even still, though, if you remember, he had that crazy September in 2022. He was a league winner and it was like, oh man, finally, all right, good, Bo Bichette's back. And then he was just fine. He was just fine after that. He was definitively not back to whatever it was that our expectations were for him going into the following season. So I don't know. It's a tough one. I think he's accomplished more in his major league career than these other guys. Like you said, he's older than them, so maybe he should have, but he has definitely accomplished more. He has a much longer track record than any of them. But I don't know how much that matters when you have a season as bad as he has had in 2024. So I know we're up against it. We're well over an hour now. We've broken down all five of these guys. Chad, do you want me to give my rankings or your rankings first for keeper leagues?
Why don't you go first?
All right, so for keeper leagues, my first shortstop of this group, I can't quit him. I'm going to go with O'Neal Cruz. I don't think he's told me enough this year. I'm going to continue to rock with him. Second for me is going to be Bo Bichette. Like I said, he does have a little bit of a tracker. I think he's been unlucky this year. I know it's crazy to have those two over this next guy, the way he's hitting, but I have Zach Neto third. Anthony Volpe, I'm just concerned about that barrel rate. It's too much tinking. So I've got Volpe fourth. And I'm going to have Ezekiel Tovar fifth. The reason that you cited, the plate discipline stuff is weird. Maybe it's going to be easy to fix, but it's not great. And clearly he's not very good at stealing bases. So to run through it, that's Cruz one, Bichette two, Neto three, Volpe four, and Ezekiel Tovar five.
Yeah, so it does depend a lot on format here, because I think like in auto new points leagues, Volpe's fifth for me. And I think pretty easily fifth. So let me start with that format. With that format, I'd probably go Cruz. Oh boy. Cruz, Bichette, Neto, Tovar, Volpe.
Cruz, Bichette, Neto, Tovar, Volpe. So
yeah,
we're
lockstep,
I guess, just the last two flipped.
Well, but that I'm saying specifically for points leagues. For auto new points leagues. For like a 5x5.
Oh, it changes. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you just flipping Volpe and Tovar or no?
I have Neto first, I think. I'm leaving Bichette out for a moment.
Okay.
Let me just table Bichette. For a 5x5, I would go Neto, Cruz, Volpe, Tovar.
Okay. I could see that.
I don't know what I'm doing with Bichette yet. Because I'm either going to be out on him, like, because he's still going as like a early pick and I'm not interested, or I'm going to determine.
I hope not anyway.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know. He probably does fall somewhere in the middle. I just don't know where. And But then it seems silly not to have him first. It just, like, he's been so good for so long.
I know. I'm not, and I guess I'm saying you're silly, but.
That's fine. I get that all the time. But I did have him second. I just, I mean, look, the upside of O'Neal Cruz, you know, I'll never get over that. It's like my new Jazz Chisholm. Like, I'm going to tout that forever.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know. To me, again, 5x5, I have Volpe. No, sorry. I have Neto, Cruz, Volpe, Tovar. In points leagues, I have. So far, let me make sure I have this right. 5x5, I have Neto, Cruz, Volpe, Tovar. In points leagues, I have Cruz, Neto, Tovar, Volpe.
That's fair.
And I don't know where Bichette goes. I just don't know.
Well, I like your ranking of Neto because I think we're being honest with ourselves. We had something negative or a con, I guess, about all of these players except for Zach Neto. It was all roses. So maybe this is the Zach Neto official podcast, Keeper Cut. We sponsor Zach Neto. But some good shortstop talk there. We went a little long today, folks. We appreciate you sticking with us. And we will see you in a week next Monday.